Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning, Peter.
Funny, because I know I heard some of that conversation, because we were going down to Pittsburgh for a basketball tournament, and I know we spoke off-air about the vibrancy of Pittsburgh. I know it's a somewhat larger city, but we were there on a Saturday night, and it was just so vibrant and lively, so many things going on. I know they have a major league team, which baseball, which we don't, but it wasn't just that. It's just a bigger, more vibrant economy. And I'm not exactly familiar with their economic development policies down there, but I know that we up here, we emphasize sort of central economic planning, New York style, with heavy subsidies, heavily targeted tax breaks. And they certainly don't do that as much down there, and yet their economy is way ahead of ours, as is Ohio's. And I like to talk about Ohio and Pennsylvania. They're very close. They're large states. They have a diversity of population. And I crunched some numbers this morning, because in the old days when I was more heavily involved in trying to change things here locally, I would always look at those states and say, well, they have significantly lower state and local spending, and yet all the government that you would seem to desire. And therefore, there's this sort of New York cost of government that we all suffer through. I actually did some back-of-the-envelope calculations. If we had Ohio's rate of state and local spending, we would save $40 billion a year in New York. Now, when you drive through these states, as I do often, I was in Ohio recently and Pennsylvania, and you look closely, if you're a policy wonk, you're looking around to see what's going on, and you see, and I'm sure you would agree with me because you're a real estate expert, you see newer, shinier buildings, bigger, newer houses. You see landscaping. I always look for landscaping because that's something you do with discretionary income. Mm-hmm. There's more of that. My son and I were having a really nice walk through an upscale Cleveland suburb right off the lake. You've probably been there. And we were just astonished at the number of really expensive driveway basketball hoops. And sure, we have them in Buffalo, but there seemed to be one about every three or four houses. And that, again, that's a sign of discretionary income. That's that $40 billion that Ohioans have in their pocket to spend, that in New York we spend essentially for nothing, because, I mean, look at our roads. I mean, I did a column about Niagara Falls about a month ago. It's like a dying city. And even in Buffalo, I see road construction going on, but the quality of the roads generally is so poor for all that money. So I think basically nothing's really changed since I was heavily involved 10 years ago. The economic model has not changed. We went to court over it. We lost, and I just backed out because there was nothing really to do. But I don't think this centralized planning is working. I don't think five people in Albany are going to outsmart 7.3 billion people in the market, which is where, in the market, the decisions are made by all our tiny little choices added together. We all have a little piece of knowledge that nobody else has. Hayek, the economist, talked about that localized knowledge. But in New York, we got five people making decisions based on who knows what. I mean, I don't want to get into the corruption cases and so on. And it's all very predictable, and we all pretty much said that would happen. But our model is not working. We are, I looked at the study today, we are dead last in Freedom of the 50 States, published by Cato. My friend Jason Sorens is the administrator of that PhD in political science.
What does that mean?
Well, Jason Sorens and his partner, whose name escapes me, I apologize, they've been doing a study, Freedom in the 50 States, and they break it down basically personal freedom, economic freedom. And really across the board, I was focusing this morning, New York is traditionally ranked last, California is the second least free state, and then Hawaii, which has a very unique situation being in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. New York's the least free state, and we're the least free state in fiscal policy, that's government spending. We're the least free state in regulation, which is one of the themes of my work, is how destructive regulations are, and yet we don't have the means to calculate how destructive they are. But we do know that New York is a very hostile regulatory environment. So
let me stop you there for a second, because this has been a kind of a pet personal project of mine to study just this whole, the evolution that you're talking about, not just in New York State, but in government more generally. Here's my analysis, which goes back to my first government class in college. Mm-hmm. It goes something like this. We elect people to go to whatever legislature might exist in locally or state or national, whatever. They go there to presumably to make laws, to make life better for all the rest mm-hmm. of us. Every time a law is passed, by necessity, it creates a bureaucracy to enforce that law.
Mm-hmm.
The bureaucracy is built on a series of regulations. You can't do this, you have to do that, you must get this license, whatever the case might be. And then bureaucracies exist to perpetuate themselves. And bureaucracies are controlled then by the executive branch, for the most part, in each of these various government layers. We in New York State have built such a monstrous bureaucracy mm-hmm. On so many layers of regulation. And I've asked my guests the last couple of weeks, what do you do about that? I mean, you can cite all the things you're citing here. And with all due respect, it helps to educate the public. But mm-hmm. isn't it to a large extent an exercise in frustration? Because when you get to a point where the dismantling of any bureaucracy or ridding ourselves mm-hmm. of any single regulation has so many obstacles in the way to make that happen, that don't people just give up and try to live within that system? And doesn't that yeah. create the system effectively that we have right now, where we try to get something done? So we say, well, I could rid myself of all these regulations, or I could just go to the government with my hand out and try mm-hmm. to figure out a way to get first in line.
Yeah, well, that's you put a lot on the table. Yes, these bureaucracies are virtually impossible to get rid of. Just on the national level, I've been talking recently. You know, we've had this progressive system for about 100 years, and it's the state, really in the country. I mean, small p progressive, meaning the government's going to solve, you know, whatever problem comes down the highway, and these agencies are created according to this ideology, and then whether they work or not, you can't get rid of them. And in fact, when the Republicans come into power, and they have had, and I talk about this in the progressivism book, they have had control of all three branches for some period of time, maybe 2 years, maybe 4 years, several times in recent history and currently. And you go back to 1914 when they put in the income tax and the Federal Reserve, which are two huge planks in the progressive platform, capital P and small p. These Republicans haven't been able to get rid of anything. I mean, HUD, I mean, all sorts of failed, I know HUD has a number of elements, but the public housing aspect of HUD has just been a colossal failure. I mean, nobody wants to live in these places. They tear them down, they build them up again. There's just so much money to be made from them. But we can't get rid of these bureaucracies because the political system is rigged. It's controlled by elites and special interest groups. We tried to organize a Free New York, Free Buffalo movement, just sort of average citizens. If you're out there and your platform is what's going to improve the welfare of the average person, you can't get anybody excited because you're up against people who their whole industry might depend on defeating you, and they have millions of dollars to spend. I mean, the best, skipping ahead very quickly, The best investment you can make in New York is to give money to a politician. And I could cite chapter and verse where somebody might give, like, wow, they're giving $300,000 to a politician. You have no idea. They're getting $60 million back. I mean, you can't get that on Wall Street or even in a speculative equity fund or whatever. People do have a lot of money. The best investment is a politician. So the system's rigged. I personally have backed out because I don't want to, you know, I'm a stubborn person and I hate to quit, but I don't want to beat my head against the wall, you know, when I'm not accomplishing anything. So I haven't totally given up. I've just shifted my activities away from the Buffalo area towards national stuff and to sort of direct action ideas instead of the political realm and the courts, because although I still practice and I have some Second Amendment cases, for example, still going in the courts. I mean, with the failure of the Pork lawsuit, which was where the New York Court of Appeals ignored the plain language of the law, you can't give money to private corporations. They said you can. I said, well, that's fine. I'm done. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to even take a small donation from somebody and know that it's not going to be productive. I know I'm going to lose the case. So hope I've answered your question. You've put a lot on the table.
Well, you have, from a standpoint of your own frustration.
Mm-hmm.
But it's I know that you still care.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
I do.
And I know that our listeners care because they tell me. And they care about the future of this community. And we sense a positive momentum here, even though what you sense in Pittsburgh might be greater than what we have here. We sense something here.
Sure.
And you, if you talk to the people that are directly involved, they'll say that this is one of the great examples of public-private partnerships, to use that wonderful term, where $50 million was invested in infrastructure and stuff on the waterfront, and it yielded $250 million plus in private investment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of that might have been two properties. But maybe that would have happened anyway. Maybe it wouldn't have happened. But the fact of life is, there is a vibrant new element of our community, such as it may be compared mm-hmm. to other cities. Would that have happened without government involvement? And if we had said, just give us freedom and it would happen anyway, maybe it would, maybe it wouldn't. I don't know. But there's infrastructure elements there that really are the public domain.
Well, I think we're like, let's say you're in maximum security prison in isolation, and they let you out into the general population, you're going to be thrilled. You're going to say, wow, this is cool. I can play ping pong. We're so down. We've been down so long. They sat on the waterfront for 50 years, basically the NFTA, the authorities, and we did studies on the authorities that explained why authorities are bad, and nobody read them, and nobody cared. But backing up a little bit, I've been to Cleveland. Our natural waterfront really is nicer than theirs. It's nicer
Much
than Baltimore's.
Nicer.
It's greater potential than Pittsburgh. So if we just had sort of let private account, put this land in the hands of the private sector, let the market, the 7.3 billion people who are way smarter than five in New York, we would have been way ahead of the curve. So I don't think that the current model is working anywhere near what the free market would do.
Well, I want to get to a solution, at least in your mind, in a minute. But we've got a caller on the line. This is John from Williamsville. John, how can we help you?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hi.
But yeah, I'm a medium-sized businessman. I'm 50 now. I didn't grow up here, and I've done well here. But I beat my head against the wall all through the 90s and 2000s. And I think the way you change this is with some very serious, strong business leadership. And we've only got one man that's providing that now. And I'm here to tell you, all through the 90s and 2000s, the only thing the business leaders did was dress this guy named Andrew Redneck up like Curly and Moe's friend Larry. I mean, it was ridiculous. There was no serious effort to take a baseball bat to a union or tell welfare people to get jobs. And there certainly was no effort to curb all this corporate welfare, which just built buildings we don't need, you know. So,
well, you talk about a single strong business leader. Who are you talking about?
You know, I'm talking about Carl Palladino. I mean, he's the only guy saying anything to anyone, you know, even now, you know.
Well, in terms of a contrarian point of view to, you know, working within the system, is that what you're saying?
Well, in terms of saying this is unacceptable, hurting people's feelings, saying controversial things, that's what you do when your city's been in last place for 40 years. You don't lay down and die for this.
So what's your question? Because we're trying to
comment, but, you know, it's we're talking about how to fix these problems, and I think they were fixable a long time ago. It's just the people that should have been doing something about it, you know, didn't. And for mm-hmm. a variety of reasons, it's understandable if you yell and the unions are going to boycott on real estate.
Well, let me try to respond to that.
Thank you, John. You're making a good point.
When we started the Free New York, Free Buffalo movement, you would have thought that private business would have been much more on board. We had some very, you know, sort of small family-owned business support. I did have one meeting at the Buffalo Club with some real heavy hitters, but it didn't quite. I wore a suit and everything, and I was nice, but it didn't quite pan out. But so the question is, well, why is the sort of business class not on board with change? Well, you have this massive, political machine, political class, which look at not to get into national politics, but when they start looking at some consultants' financial records, they're going to find 2, 3, 4, 5 felonies. There's so many laws on the books. There's an atmosphere of fear, and like you've already alluded to, if any major business leader really got on board with serious change around here, he'd be afraid that they'd start looking at his books and they'd start investigating and this and that. And as Ayn Rand said, there's so many laws on the books, they can get you when they want to. So there's an atmosphere of fear. There's an atmosphere of, if I promote any real change around here, I will be cut out of any sort of grants or subsidies that I might need.
We're going to come back to that. I hate to end on a little unpleasant note like that, but we'll be right back with more from Our House to Yours after these important messages.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older, you owe it to yourself to look into a reverse mortgage. Reverse mortgages give seniors many different options to access the equity in their home. There's even a reverse mortgage for purchase available. For more information, call Karen Johnson, a reverse mortgage specialist at Hunt Mortgage, at 633-3700 or visit huntmortgage.com. Karen Johnson, NMLS number 485939. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. And I encourage you to go there today and check it out and check out our new valuation methodologies that are there to help you determine what your home may be worth in a very accurate way by looking at it three different ways. And also, you can check out any property. You drive by a house and you think it's something you might be interested in, call the Hunt Hotline, 631-4800. Doesn't have to be our listing, anybody's listing, and you'll get all the information you need. All you have to do is put in the number of the house, and our system will take care of the rest, and you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that particular property just that fast, no matter whose listing it is. It's much faster than going to the web, by the way. And I know that we all love to go to the web, but if you're driving around and you have a cell phone, take advantage of that unique opportunity. And the show is brought to you also by Hunt Mortgage. Hunt Mortgage is the home of the pre-purchase commitment that allows you to effectively enter the market with cash. And to learn about that and our other exclusive programs, call 633-3700 and speak to one of our mortgage consultants. And if you have a general question about anything relative to real estate, call the Hunt Customer Service Center, the only one in North America, 633-9400. And we'll help you with whatever it is you want to know about right there on the phone, or we'll direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever it is you may need. And that's relative to buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home, or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan, available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. And there's a new option in that service, which allows you to effectively take advantage of it almost immediately. And by the way, I'm in the studio today with Jim Ostrowski. Mr. Ostrowski is a lawyer and a founder of Free New York, and he's moved on to other things, as he's telling me. So we're talking about really his perspective on not just our community, but the nation, really, in terms of how best to free up the, I would describe it as the human and intellectual capital of this country for the best purposes of our citizenry. And the mission of our show here, Jim, is to help people protect and enhance their investment in real estate here in our communities all across upstate. So you were we kind of left on a little bit of a down note before the break, but
not me.
You were just getting started, I think. But and I don't know where you want to pick up along those lines, but I just kind of set the stage again. We have a situation here in the state which we've tried to explore that's embodied in one way, shape, or form through the budget, which basically keeps a lot of stuff in place because it's very difficult mm-hmm. to take stuff away. all that stuff inside our governmental structures costs a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, you have the national government imposing things like Medicaid and offering 36 programs that states can choose from, and New York elects almost all of them,
mm-hmm.
which means that, and then the cost burden is pushed back to the local community, which we've talked about many times
right.
here in on this show. And that's one of the things that mm-hmm. they don't have in Pennsylvania and they don't have in Ohio. They're much less burdened by their election
right.
to the Medicaid programs than we are.
Well, real quick, I mean, one of the problems in New York, and to which there's really no immediate solution, is that we are dominated by downstate. They have, you know, New York's the capital of the world, basically. New York can sustain a higher cost of government than we do and still thrive to a large extent. We can't. We're in the same state. We're stuck with the same sort of extremely expensive cost of government, but we're not the capital. We're
mm-hmm.
we're a nice regional city. We should be a nice regional city, and we just can't. We can't afford it. So we really should split into two states, but let's face it, it's not going to happen. But
if you do the math, though, and we've looked at this from any different angle, the way the cost structure is allocated in the state,
mm-hmm.
we actually, in upstate, are a beneficiary of the downstate commercial activity and the taxation that results from it. It may not be a good thing because that's a relatively high level of taxation, but the fact of life is there's more money coming upstate than in terms of the balance than is going the other way.
That's a tricky argument. I took that on at one point, and we mm-hmm. could spend an hour working on that.
Is that wrong then?
I think it's debatable. I think that
legislators will say that it's true, but I don't know.
Let's cut to the bottom line, which is that we would be better off not being dominated by New York City. Okay, we don't. Buffalo is a major economic powerhouse before this current era of progressive big government dominated by New York City. And I know there were New York City connections. There was some New York City money, but it wasn't government. It was private sector. Buffalo is one of the biggest, one of the most powerful industrial cities a long time ago. So we're not dumb. We're not lazy people. We don't need to be told what to do by people in Manhattan. I lived in New York for 8 years, and I'm certain that, you know, we don't need to be controlled by those people. So you can get into the accounting. I think the accounting is a lot trickier than people let on. But in terms of, I haven't given up. I've just, you know, if you can't go forward, you go sideways. If you're losing on a certain battlefield, you got to move to another battlefield. And I think that the battlefield is ideas. The reason I wrote progressivism is for 40 years I would make these free market libertarian, I don't like the word libertarian, but we're stuck with it for the moment, small government arguments, and people would stare at me like I was a zombie or something, or they would throw something at me or get angry and walk away. And I said, well, what is this mindset that people have that they like big government solutions and without any evidence that they work or even logical arguments that they might work? And so that's why I wrote the book Progressivism. I think that instead of putting out a lot of small fires of progressivism, if we could just get people understanding what progressivism is, which is this, and I spent 200 pages explaining what it is in my book, but it's basically this sort of irrational, emotional mindset that makes people feel good because whatever problem comes along, oh, the government can solve that problem. And if we have to get to the root of the problem, which is that mindset, and then a lot of these other problems could be solved. So I favor, through libertymovement.org, which is my relatively new and small organization, educating people about what progressivism is. Since the political system is rigged, I don't say quit or give up. I say, what can you do outside the political system? And there is a thing called direct action, which is a long and venerable history. Gandhi used it to kick the British out of India. Martin Luther King used it. There's a lot of ways to use it. One of the most effective things you can do is vote with your feet. And I'm not necessarily saying leave New York. let's say you love New York. Let's say your parents and your roots are here, your business is here. You can still, like we live in the city. Oddly enough, you think, well, the city, that's Democrats and so on. Well, we pay lower property taxes. We still use the Catholic schools and have. You can actually, if you're going to use a private school, and this gets into the education issue, which is really important. If you live in like North Buffalo or South Buffalo, there's some nice neighborhoods in the city, there's no doubt. You can actually save money. Even in the suburbs, you can pick a district, and I'm sure your company has property tax statistics mm-hmm. out there for people to check out sure. on your website. If you pick a town where you're paying a little less taxes, because you know what? That takes the money away from the political machine that runs the town. A little bit of, you chip away, you do what you can. Direct action is what the individual can do right now. You can vote with your feet to get a little less, maybe a lot less taxes, even in Western New York. Counties have different tax rates. Some people, if you might live on the edge of one county and you work in another, you can still, I know Sandy Beach lives in Niagara County, for example, so he makes that choice. Schools, look, I mean, why are the property taxes so high? You know it's because of the school districts around here. Well,
it's not about the, and you've pointed this out before, and it's something that's apparent. It's not just the cost of the education that's taking place at that moment in time. It's to a large extent, it's the residual costs for employees that are no longer there. Mm-hmm. It's the pensions that, and
right.
I mean, and that's killing not just school systems here, but almost anywhere.
Well, true, but
from a cost standpoint.
Yeah. So my philosophy is, and I try to lead by example. You know, I'm like Mr. Small Government, or really, really tiny, tiny government. So what do? I have a private business. We send our children to Catholic schools or private schools now with college. So we lead by example. If you want to reduce property taxes and you realize that about 60% of the property taxes go to public or government schools, as I prefer to call them, you might want to look at a way to go to a private school. You don't have to be a Catholic necessarily or a particular religion. Homeschooling, by the way, is the most rapidly growing sector, and that the software, the technology that's available now is amazing for homeschooling.
And that is a choice, as you say, that yep. that is increasing in popularity. You use the word progressivism often, and I'm sure. going to ask you to come back after the break and define that.
Sure.
I know that would take some time, but isn't the fact of life that progressivism is just cool now? I mean, it's something that I mean, the celebrities,
yeah.
the high profile people on television, mm-hmm. Pro athletes, you know, can't we all get along? Kind of, let's be cool in our language and not be inflammatory and that
yeah,
kind of stuff.
It is cool, and actually, leftism is on the rise again. We thought we'd put that ugly monster out of business, and when the Soviet Union collapsed, but leftism, it's like the monster in a horror movie. You think it's dead, and it comes back. It's stronger than ever. In fact, I'm doing some research on that topic at this very moment.
Well, I want you to tell us about that research when we come back. And we'll be right back with more from our upstairs after these important messages.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older, you owe it to yourself to look into a reverse mortgage. Reverse mortgages give seniors many different options to access the equity in their home. There's even a reverse mortgage for purchase available. For more information, call Karen Johnson, a reverse mortgage specialist at Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 or visit huntmortgage.com. Karen Johnson, NMLS number 485939. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. I encourage you to go there again today. Please try it out. Test drive that algorithm that we have, three algorithms actually on valuation, which nobody else has, and I encourage you to try it today. Huntrealestate.com, powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the low rate and closing cost guarantee and also the pre-purchase commitment. And we'll knock your socks off with our service. That's 633-3700. In the studio with me today is Jim Ostrowski. Mr. Ostrowski is has started a new organization.
Yes.
We'll talk about that
sure.
in the balance of our show here today. But right before the break, I was asking you whether or not progressivism hasn't kind of occupied the cool sector of the thought process mm-hmm. in this country right now, and kind of boxed out everybody else. And,
right.
and you talked about a rise of liberalism, and without you know favoring one side or the other, right. tell me why you would observe that.
Well, progressivism has been dominant for a long time.
It, define it yeah. just as quickly as you can.
Yeah, there's more than one definition. My take on progressive, I look at the heart of progressivism. There's a number of ways you could look at it, but what to me the progressive thinks that for any new problem that comes down the highway, Ostrowski might say, well, the free market will solve that. Or Ostrowski might say, there is no solution to that. It's the human condition. Deal with it. The progressive will say, no, there is a government solution. Now, there's no evidence or logic to that belief. It's not a logical or empirical belief. It's an emotional belief. And it's a powerful emotional belief because people want to have control over their life. So this progressivism is this very powerful ideology that's sort of taken over the country. I think that more people are progressives than they would even admit. Now, leftism is a slightly different thing, which is probably more that we could tackle. But I think the leftist is a progressive, but the leftist is a radical egalitarian who wants to, and since reality isn't structured in an equal manner, the leftist is always causing problems throughout history, major problems when they have power, minor problems when they don't, but watch it when they get power, because we've seen that. I don't want to give you the obvious examples, the French Revolution, the Bolsheviks, Cambodia, and so on. And there's this scary rise of leftism today, which I'm doing some research on. I'm actually going to put out a book on that topic. But it just along the lines of positive, you know, solutions and educating people, which I know you emphasize on your show. The latest one of the latest projects I'm working on is this concept of, because the left is coming in with their living wage concept. I thought about mm-hmm. this. Well, what about a living cost of government? We neglect the fact that one of the reasons why low-wage workers can't afford to live is because they pay so much for the cost of government. So I wanted to focus people on that, and I wrote an article for Lou Rockwell. It's called For a Living Cost of Government. But specifically, what I want to do is try to convince employers and the payroll firms. I know there's big ones and small ones, and some employers do their own, but to put an accurate accounting of the money that, say, your company spends. You spend a lot of money on employees that the employee doesn't even know about. I have asked mm-hmm. people numerous times, did you know that your employer matches your share of Social Security? I get a blank stare. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew that. But you know what? That's something that workers need to know. Unemployment insurance. It seems like a good idea, but do you know how much you pay for it? Well, oh, my employer pays. Nonsense. Your employer's not running a charity. You're paying it. It's just that it's an accounting sort of error, really, that it's the employer paying it. That should be on everybody's paycheck. Workers' comp and other things and health care. If we could educate people just with an accurate accounting, and I've almost flunked accounting in high school, but there's good accountants out there who could put together a good pay stub that would really indicate how much it costs to hire somebody. When we were in Ohio, we went to a McDonald's. There's people crawling all over, washing your table. Can I get you another cup of coffee? In New York, you see in the big box stores and in the fast food places, there's nobody there. It's because we've made it so impossible to hire anybody. So there are practical solutions to educate people. We got to educate people to get them on a different path, or else the practical solutions, the elections and voting for people, that's not going to work, because what we need is not on the menu right now. We need to get it on the menu.
Well, that's a tall order.
It is.
Going back to the coolness factor here,
sure.
Because I sense, as an outsider looking at all this, not, I'm part of it, but I mean, as I look at what's going on and I watch intensely each morning, I watch the financial news mm-hmm. and I watch various forms of cable news, just
sure.
because I want to see how various schools of thought look at the same
yeah.
issue. And right now, it's quite clear to me that the cool kids are in the progressive camp. And I'm not speaking, you know, in any way, shape, or form from a value standpoint.
Absolutely.
But this is seems to be the case. If you look at who's in that camp, it's among our wealthiest people in this country, which is, you know, surprising to me in many respects. Mm-hmm. It's celebrities. It's high-profile people in the media. And like you said, cited earlier, the people that were high-profile on the other side become personally attacked, and then they're gone.
Well, that's what happened to somebody at Google the other day when they wrote a memo. They got fired from their job.
They're just gone.
And they're demonetizing YouTube videos that are not left or progressive.
Well, I mean, so what once that momentum is there, and then you have leaders of the free world that are making themselves kind of the icon of the other side, mm-hmm. whether or not they are, just by virtue of what they're saying, creating a huge target, and then getting this groundswell of movement behind the opposition. What do you do about that? I mean, is this just become a self-fulfilling?
Well, you do ask the tough questions. Let me answer it this way. We ordered some fast food yesterday. North Bailey is a nice a takeout restaurant there. And we drove around the neighborhood because it wasn't going to be ready for 20 minutes. Maybe those people at Google, the hip people who take naps at work, which is probably a good idea, by the way, scientifically. I don't know if you allow it at your company. But, you know,
if my door's closed,
they're supposedly
don't knock on the door.
They're supposedly in favor of the welfare of the poor and the working class and the struggling people. When you drive in that little neighborhood around UB, east of Bailey, and those houses haven't been updated in 70 years. There hasn't been, the free market hasn't built a house on the east side in, 67 years without some sort of a government subsidy. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that you can outflank the left by saying, how are the people doing that you leftists allegedly care about? Most of the people in America are broke or living paycheck to paycheck. The working class, the poor, they're struggling. Their health is struggling. And I think we need to outflank them by saying, you know what? We actually care about the people that you pretend to care about.
Isn't that what swept Donald Trump into the White House?
To a certain extent.
I mean, he got up there and said,
he represents,
what the hell do you have to lose?
He appealed to people. I went to the Trump rally. I wrote an article about it for Art Voice. I studied the crowd very carefully. It was a mostly white, there were some minorities there. It was a mostly white, older, working class audience, people who had a tough life. You know, somebody said, well, how come Trump won? I don't understand why Trump won. And somebody else said, media, whatever, Twitter, because white males haven't had a raise for 35 years. How about that, left wing? Mm-hmm. That's why. People are suffering out there who aren't in the elite, in the cool, hip communities that you alluded to.
That's true, but unfortunately, they have the microphone.
They absolutely do, almost every one of them.
So we have a caller on the line, Jim. This
sure.
is Darcy from Youngstown. Darcy,
sure.
How can we help you?
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment. I loved the idea of educating employees with their pay stub, just at least mm-hmm. getting the information there. Mm-hmm.
Audit the paycheck. It's a hashtag now.
And when I moved to Youngstown, was 4 years ago, I moved from Alaska, and we did search out a house specifically focused on where the taxes were lower, mm-hmm. and we chose Youngstown over, say, Lewiston.
Excellent.
And we were still in the same schools, but now we've chosen to go the Catholic route on the high schools. But a lot of people, I think, pay their property tax in escrow or through an escrow account, so they never actually see it. But in the corner, it says a percentage. I think it's 60%. To downstate, and I, you know, when I first noticed that, I was like aghast. And when I mentioned it to neighbors or friends of mine that live here, you know, like nobody had really noticed to see that. So I think it's really important because it really drives home when you write that full check once a year instead of in escrow once a month. There is some correlation between, whoa, this is not how I want to spend my money, is to supply downstate with
Well, Darcy, it's not necessarily downstate, if I can begin to correct you a little bit on that. If you take the cost of Medicaid alone, it's soon to chew up your entire tax bill. So that's a mandated cost that you didn't ask for, and no one asked for in this community. But
well, LBJ asked for it.
LBJ originally
asked
for it.
That's the problem. He's dead now.
But what he said, if you remember what he did, it was supposed to be 75% funded by the national government, 25% by the state. Now it's 50-50, mm-hmm. and the state then has burdened the local municipality, I believe, is 75% of that 50%.
And it was supposed to be a very, very tiny expenditure overall, and it's like quadrupled, and if not way more than that.
But just to Darcy's point, sure. I mean, seeing the money go out of our community, I think, is really what she's saying.
Yeah.
And that her tax dollars are not going to make a better place for her in Youngstown.
Well, one of the points I made in my book, not to get too partisan, is that, look, if you're a conservative Republican in the suburbs and your money's going to the public schools, study sometime where the teachers' unions give their donations, your teachers that you're paying for. It's 90 to 95% Democrats. Think about that, folks.
Well, again, we're not trying to be too partisan here, Bob, I appreciate that, and I wanted you to share your thoughts along the idea of really, and we got there, but I'm going to have you come back to talk about this, because ultimately, as I said earlier, our mission here is to help our people protect, mm-hmm. our listeners, protect and enhance their investment right here and all through upstate. And it's a challenge.
Absolutely.
It's a challenge. At the same time, we're seeing momentum here in our community, and we want that to continue. And my guests here have been all designed around that. And mm-hmm. your direction is different than most of the other guests I've had here, that if I'm interpreting it correctly, that the idea is to free people to do what they wish, really.
Yes. Thank you. Exactly.
And to put more resources in their hands.
That's liberty. Doing what you wish with what you own.
As opposed to having winners and losers chosen at some governmental level.
By five people in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. It's funny, a couple of years ago, almost every statewide official lived within a few blocks of each other in Manhattan. Those people are telling us how to live. It's so sad.
Well, some people might argue with that, but we have to leave it there. James Ostrowski, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks a lot. It was a lot of fun.
I'd like to thank our listeners for being with us. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, Western New York is hunt country.